So hello, let's get started. So Professor Charles is in some conference in Minnesota, so he's enjoying some snows there. So today I'm going to cover one class for the virtual memory page table and all those tricks. So personally, I think virtual memory is the biggest part in the operating system. This is one of the coolest part if you are planning to do any research or anything cool. In terms of operating system, you will encounter virtual memory and page tables and all those tricks that we're going to cover today. I think previously, last lecture, you guys talked about a lot of code, how to implement the page tables and set up those things and how CPU will pick it up, the memories and so and so. And today we will go a little bit high level things. So I think last class you guys look at this XV6 page fault. Essentially, if let's say you want to execute this kind of code and your virtual memory for your process does not really have this address, so this is not a valid address, and then you try to set something into this address, then what's going to happen in the kernel is it's going to just print out, okay, some PID and some of the memory at some instruction, try to access some memory that it shouldn't access, and then kill the process and keep going. So this is kind of the format of those kind of things, and the TRAP14 essentially means that this calls the exception registered at the TRAP sort of interrupt vector, which is number 14. And this also gives some other information probably useful for debuggers and person who's debugging this operating system, like here, instruction pointer is 1A and so on. Most useful information will be where the process tried to access, which is stored in CR2. Is short for control register. CPU, in essentially x86 CPU, usually have a lot of control registers for debuggings and page table, all other stuff. CR2 here stores the address that the application wants to access. You can see 800444, and then it displays the same address. And we will see also CR3 later, which essentially stores the pointer of page tables, so that if CPU wants to access some virtual memory, and it will go through all the page table to find physical memory to obtain the contents. We're going to see all those things later. All right. So the previous example essentially say that, okay, if they cannot find, if the operating system or CPU couldn't find this address, it will just say, okay, I cannot find, and then just print out those things and then kill the process. But this is not good, so if someone wants to implement the page fault properly, then what we can do is essentially just to make sure if the address is actually okay address, which means that the process is essentially allowed to access the address, but it was not set up properly. If that's the case, then it's going to set up the page table entry for that address, and then try to rerun the instruction that tried to access the address. But there are other cases. Let's say a process starts and then it say, okay, I only need like 1 gigabyte of the memory. I will only access those range of the memory, and then it tries to access some larger memory that it shouldn't access. In that case, it goes to here, which means that the kernel asks, like, okay, is this address okay? And it says no, then it's going to be the extra seg fault, and then we do the same thing, print out, okay, this process try to access something that doesn't belong to, and then kill the process and go on. Any question? All right. All right. So we will also talk about how we can determine if this address is OK later. And this class also talk about a lot how we can set up page tables efficiently. So to do all those things, to determine which address space reason is good or bad, we need to have a lot of other extra data structures. And with those data structure, OS can do a lot of tricks to optimize the performance and the memory space. And of course, we need to do a lot of bookkeeping stuff, stores a lot of information, and then provide an efficient way to retrieve all those things. Essentially, to do the tracking, what process think, what kind of memory they should have, and how to maintain those things to speed up the process. And a lot of other cases that I'm sure you guys are now familiar with the fork, and then you have, if you use fork, then you essentially have multiple processes that may share a lot of similar data. And those things will be implemented by sharing the physical pages between multiple processes through those page table tricks. So one of the biggest reasons that we have this page trick is that long time ago, sometimes, this is also true for some small devices these days, programs want to access way larger memories than they have physically. So then how we can do, provide a illusion of having really large memory for each process so that they don't really worry about the storage. Instead, okay, we provide an illusion to each process that they have larger memory by providing, allocating memory on demand by operating system. So let's say a program has this kind of structure, and let's say we have a stack, and then somehow we allocate huge stack, and some of the space is actually used, but some of them are not. It really depends on a program and the workload. And operating system try to optimize this the size of the memory so that if they use, then we want to do allocation memory allocation for the user space while we are not wasting the other space, which probably will not be used by this program. And operating system will take care of all those things transparently so that program writer doesn't really care about all those things. So this is an example of allocating space on demand. So here we have three instructions, and let's say the current stack address is pointing 7FFFC and all zeros. And then here is the memory state now. So this is kind of memory address that program is just looking at. Each program only sees the virtual address. They will never see these physical pages. These physical pages are all maintained by operating system. And this is essentially what your physical memory will have. So for example, when you are writing your own program, you may think you are accessing the consecutive memory. Like here, you can see B, C, D, E, F, all consecutive memory. But all the contents you are accessing and you think you're accessing consecutively are stored in 200DF, 12340, 12347, so it's not consecutive. And even the address that we are about to access is not even existing on the physical memory. So when we try to execute this push queue, which will push the value of RBX register at this address stored in RSP register, which is 7FFFC C, all zeros. right. And the first thing you will do is like decrease the address of this RSP, and then try to store this value of RBX at that decreased address, which we decreased, and it's going to be here, and there is no physical memory page table, physical memory here assigned yet. Then it's going to cause the page fault. Essentially, hardware say, okay, I tried to store something in this virtual memory, but I didn't find where I should store. then it's the OS turn to find a physical memory page and then set up all those things so that this operation can be successful. And what the OS is going to do is, okay, put the valid sign here, which means that, okay, this page table is now appropriately installed, and also write that, okay, this virtual memory address is mapped to this address of the physical memory. So if they want to find any data assigned to here, they will go, the CPU actually will go to the physical page address at here and then retrieve the data so that the program can continue. And this all in, setting up and then set the valid bit is all done by operating system. This program doesn't really need to care anything, and all those things are done transparently. All right, any question on this slide? Sure.
So RSP is 7 at that C. Why are we looking at 7 at that?
Because you do, so the question is, so at this moment, when we execute push Q, it's going to push something onto the stack where the stack address is 7FFC, but at here, we are actually accessing 7FFB, and the question is why it's not accessing C and rather than, you know, that thing. So when you do the push, you first need to decrease the RSP because it's pointing the stack top, but you want to push something new, so you need to first decrease the thing so that you don't overwrite the last one. So it's just, you know, right. On the other hand, when you pop, you don't decrease. You just pop the last one, and then the decrease. So yeah, it's just how the Intel CPU, decide to do. Like, you know, when you push, it will decrease, and then push. When you pop, and then first pop, and then increase. Yeah. So you may remember in Xv6, we have this SSC, which essentially means the size of the process memory, which essentially means that when process create, they are specifying, okay, I need this amount of memory for my whole life. And then this is the variable, so technically you can just specify huge memory. Let's say you have like 15 years ago, I was running a computer that only has 16 megabytes, but each program can claim that, okay, I need like 400 megabytes. And let's say you try to run tens of those programs, but you only have 16 megabytes, right? And in Xv6, they can do also the same thing. Even though you have insufficient physical memory, they can always claim that, oh, I want to use huge memory, and then you can execute those processes a lot. And to make them run and make them happy, you need to essentially allocating space on demand. Like essentially, okay, I can guarantee you will get 400 megabyte, but I'm not going to give you right now because you're not really using it. And so previously we also saw there are some legitimate page faults that we need to allocate the new spaces But there are other page fault that we need to actually kill because it tried to access invalid memory or the memory that it shouldn't access. In here, XP6 is kind of actually just determined by if it tried to access the larger address than this size, then it just kill the process. So this is kind of the logic. The size essentially means that this process can access the memory between the zero address and then the size of this process memory. So if a process wants to access some address larger than the size, then it say, okay, this is out of bounds, which is invalid, and then just kill the process. Otherwise, it try to set up the virtual page number, and then allocate the physical pages, and then return from the interrupt so that it can continue the normal execution. So this XP6 simplify all the things a lot by just saying, okay, the valid address is a zero to the size, but in real world Linux and Windows, that's not the case. They will have some multiple blocks of the memory that is valid, and if it falls in between those blocks, they will say, okay, this is invalid. And those are, we are not gonna really cover how to maintain those things efficiently, but this is just how other operating system works. And I think you guys also are pretty well really familiar with the fork because of all these homeworks. And creating a program is there are a lot of things to do, load the program and set up the variables and so on. And if you run one program, you may need to load a lot of libraries. So even though you think you are running like 100 kilobyte program, essentially you may need to access more than like 10, 20, maybe like 100 megabyte of other libraries, data, and so on. But you may notice that fork is way faster than you actually create a new program. This is because the operating system underneath plays page table tricks. So let's say we have a bash program, and this is the memory structure. It has a stack, it has a heap, writable data code and constants, and now you call the forks and it create a new copy of a bash process. And it has the exact same thing. And there are some of the data these two processes will share or can share 100%. These are code and constant. Constant and code you will never change, so it will be the exact carbon copy of bash. So you can actually share those things as read-only. We will see how operating system will do later. And there are some other data, like writable data, for example, like global variables. You can change the data. And some of them actually can be shared. For example, let's say you fork the bash and then you don't change all the global variables. You may change one or two global variables, then large portion of this writable data could be shared. But some of them, if you want to change, then those portion of memory cannot be changed. Then the question is how we can optimize while not really copying a lot of things, because it will slow down. So operating system play tricks for them. Let's see. Right, this is essentially sharing writable data is fine until one of the process tries to modify the copy. Essentially sharing data, sharing global variable is fine as long until one of the process set a new value onto the global variable. So even though you fork you have, now you have two processes. You want to have each process independent global variables. And the question is, all these things should be done by operating system, and we are not really knowing the semantics of the program. Program wouldn't tell, okay, this is a global variable. Then how the operating system can detect those modifications and duplicate those global variables or memory pages that contains global variable. So one way to do, and most operating system do, is when we fork, even though this is writable data, it will say, okay, duplicate these pages, and then say it is read-only. So essentially tell the CPU the shared part, which will be written at some point if your program wants to change the global variables or other data, but it first say, okay, everything is read-only. And then the process, when one of the program try to write the things, then the processor will say, okay, there is a page fault because a program is trying to write something, but it was read-only. Initially say it's read-only, but now it's doing something not allowed. And that's the point you operating system detects and duplicate the new pages and then make it writable. So essentially, this could be a naive implementation. You can just all duplicate new things and then put all the right. But what operating system will do is, okay, have this virtual memory, and it's all valid, it's all copied, but it's not writable. So you notice that this, let's say this is the parents and this is the child process, which forked out, and these are initially actually all writable. So the program at some point will try to write the contents here. And notice here, before it writes anything, all the physical pages mapped to the same virtual address are all same. Like the first one is 45. I will just look at the last two numbers because it's a lot. This is 45, and this one is also 45. This is 40, and here is 40. This is AF, this is AF, so essentially completely duplicated. And then now the situation is this child process wants to write something at here. And what's going to happen is CPU sees this write operation at here and then look at the page table and then see, okay, it is not allowed to write anything. And then it calls the page fault, and within the page fault, the operating system will change, okay, now it is writable. Anyway, we need to write something. But before, it was the same physical memory page mapped to the address. Now we allocate new physical page because now it is 200AF, and now at this address in process 1 and process 2 has different contents, so it cannot be shared. And so that we allocate new physical memory, update the this page table, and then write the contents, and then continue the execution. This can be happen in either of these process, and the process will be exactly the same. Any question on this part?
Since now we have two separate copies, if you write both then.
Yeah, if it tries to write here, the detailed implementation could be different. So your question is essentially, what if after this operation, what if this one wants to write? Is it the case, or before this write operation, if it happens here, then it's going to be the same thing, but. Here we have the write operation, then it gets the new physical memory block, and now this 200AF, this process 1 wants to write something in the 605. And what's going to happen is that if this memory block is only used by this process, then what it can actually do is just change this bit right, because nobody is sharing, you don't actually need to duplicate if this is only owned by this process. But if this is owned by some other process, then you're going to do the same thing. You're going to allocate the new physical memory, copy all the contents, and then put the write here, and then update this address, and then change the value. But if this physical page is only owned by this guy, then you don't need to allocate anything, and then you just change the data directly, and then put the write, change this write bit, and that's it. Yeah, I think you can do, but I don't think actually in modern operating system, I'm not sure how much speed up you can on. I think that could be one optimization if you know the exact workload and then you kind of know that, okay, I'm not going to run a lot of application. Then, you know, some people may argue that just get rid of all these things, just run the physical things. But yeah, of course, yeah, that could be one optimization in extreme situation. All right.
So going back to the first question, the reason why we don't change it to the right bit is because it's the parent process.
The reason why we have a read only in the first place. Is it the question?
No, the question is that for the process on the right hand side, we changed the right bit to 1 and then updated that value.
Why we update this right value?
No, the question is is the reason why we don't update the 1 on the left because it's the parent process?
Oh, no, it's not because it's parent process, because there were was no write operation yet. So the idea is like copy on write. So what we want to do is if there is no write, we want to share with everyone. It can be shared with the read only. So you can share the things you know if it's not changed yet. So right. After, let's say, you know, it's not about these parents or something, if the same operation happens on the parents, it's going to be the same thing. It will change the right bit here, and then it will allocate the new things and then update these addresses. So it will just, you know, whole table will just flip. Right. Okay. Intuitively, you just look at, you know, look at the name, this is a copy on write. So the best situation is a process you fork, like say you fork 10 times, and if none of them doesn't want to change their own global variables, then all you can do is actually you can only have one physical copy on the physical memory and then share all these page tables with the 10 programs. Then in physical memory, you will only have one program, but you can run, you know, 10 programs by manipulating this page table mappings. And this is essentially try to share as much as possible and only allocate new buffer if they want to have their private copy of some of the data. So this will minimize the physical memory consumption. And there are many other cases you will encounter. The operating system will run page fault. For example, like you, if a program tried to write forbidden page, which means that in x86 it wants to access some memory address larger than their size, then obviously it's illegal memory access. Then it will kill the process, and then Right. Instead of allocate the physical memory, update the page table, and so on. Another case, we just saw trying to write some data on read-only page, which we use to detect the memory updates in a particular process. And there are also other cases that it set up, operating system set up the page tables, but it wouldn't allocate physical memories if it's not used yet. In those cases, they will dynamically allocate the memories and so on. Right, so this is essentially the question had. If only one page table refers to a physical memory, then we don't actually need to allocate new physical page. We can just make it writable and then write the things, the contents there. Essentially, right after this situation, if the parents process wants to some data at 6:05, and if we are 100% sure this 200AF is owned only by this process, then we don't need to allocate new things. We just keep this mapping and then change the value and then just put the right bits on this physical page. Right. And one way to set up those like physical page mapping in Linux is using this mmap function. So from the name, you can see it's the memory map. So you can map a lot of things to the memory. This is an example. Okay, open a sum file, and we get the file descriptor as a return. And then we call mmap, and then we give this file descriptor here, and it returns the buffer, which is the memory address. And this memory address now is the contents of the file. So after this, you can sort of just random access the file. Operating system will take care, get the contents from the file, and then map to the memory. So instead of just file open and read and fseek and so on, you can just do the mmap and then try to access the particular offset of the return buffer of mmap. Then you're gonna achieve file read operation. And you can also do file write operation, essentially just writing some new values at the buffer returned. Any question on this slide?
So the data pointer, does it point to a virtual memory? Or like
yep. Okay. Yeah, it's like a just normal like heap buffer. So it's going to return some memory, and then you're going to use it as a heap memory. So this is actually used a lot in high-performance applications. Or sometimes you just want to have like random memory access, but let's say you want to play a movie and movie file is 4 gigabytes, and you don't want to open a file and then dump whole 4 gigabytes onto your program, because when you play a movie, you know, you are not necessarily actually access the buffer in front and buffer at the end at the same time. You're gonna have some sort of windows and so on. And if you do the mmap, you don't need to allocate the huge buffer at once. Operating system will take care of how you know this buffer is allocated optimally, and so on. And you don't need to do like fseek and fread and list buffer and all those hassles. So that's good. That's for kind of good use cases, but. One interesting use of this mmap is that uh, Let's say you are creating some malware, and then you want to avoid what you are doing from the antivirus systems or so on. And those antivirus systems taps on system calls like fread and fsig and all those things, and they are kind of trying to understand what kind of file you access, what kind of file you read and write, and so on. And by doing this open nmap, of course, they can tap on this open nmap and say, okay, they try to access this file, but this operation is completely oblivious to any system call. Mm-hmm. So those antivirus systems wouldn't have any idea what kind of data actually you read and you change and so on. All the information they get is, okay, they try to access this file. So it is used by a lot of those non-honest applications, and those things are really hard to track. Now, you know, you're gonna need to develop a program that tracking every single this data access, read and write, which is almost impossible to do in practice within reasonable performance overhead. So, that could be a interesting practical usage of nmap. One of the tricks a lot of people plays. So now let's just look at this nmap function. It has a bunch of arguments, and let's go over some of the important arguments. First, of course, it has the length of the buffer returned by this nmap, and here is the file descriptor, what kind of file you want to map to the memory. And here is the offset. So let's say you open like 4 gigabytes large files, and you only want to share later half of the file. Then you can put this offset at like 2 gigabytes. If the file is 4 gigabytes, then it's gonna just after it returns the buffer, you access the first byte of the buffer. It's gonna be the first byte of the half, the later half of the file. And here we have a protection. You can map the contents of the file to the memory, and then let the memory has the access, has protection attribute. You can allow only for read. You can also allow write. You can specify the contents can be executed. So Linux system essentially use this nmap to load the executable file and then try to execute. Of course, Linux loader doesn't want to do fopen, fread, and all those hassles. And also, a lot of executable file, when you execute the program, you don't really need to have all the file contents ready at once. So sometimes you access some portion of the program. So Linux just use this nmap to optimize those cases. And here we have also protect none, which kind of like if you put this guy and then access the buffer, is always gonna cause the page fault. So this is mostly just used to debug the program. Any question here? All right. And here is the flag, and this is also quite important. We will look at this one time to time. And the flag has like map shared, map private. So map shared, essentially you can use this flag to share the contents with the file and the memory. So essentially, if you map the file with this map shared flag, and then you change the contents in the buffer returned by from the nmap, then you are essentially also changing the file contents when the memory is unmapped. And map private, essentially you just create a memory and then all copy the files, but all the changes you made on the return buffer will not be copied back to the file. And there are other additional flags, map anonymous, which will create the memory reason, but it's not mapped particularly to a file descriptor. And the first argument is pretty interesting. So you can actually specify, okay, I want mmap, I want map some of the file contents to memory, but I want to map at a specific address. So you can pass a specific address that you want to create those mapping. But depending on the situation, if the memory is already occupied, then it could be just ignored. And usually, if you are not picky with the address, you can just pass null, and the operating system will just find a large enough buffer that is not used by anyone else, and then return the things. We are pretty much used this null. And then this is how a virtual memory in Linux really look like. So here, this is the contents of a file stored in proc folder, in proc self map file. So this map essentially means that the mappings of the virtual memory of a self process. So you can actually replace this self with other process to just look at what kind of memory and how the memory region is allocated in running process. And this is kind of, we'll just show the current running the process itself. So when we execute this cat cat on this file, the self essentially means the cat itself. So this is the memory kind of layout of the cat. So this is 32-bit machine. This is sort of a tradition that we allocate the code base at this 4 and 5 zeros. And then this is like the size of this memory is, let's see, the size of this memory is like a deep, this B 3 zeros. So this essentially contains the code of this bin cat program. And the next column essentially shows that the access, like a property of this memory region. R means readable. The second one here is dash, which means that it doesn't have the bit. The second essentially means the write. And X essentially means executable. And from here, you can infer, okay, this is the code, because you don't want to change your code, but to execute your code, the CPU must be able to read the contents here, and also executable. It should be executable. And here, P means private. It's going to do the copy and write if writable, but normally, you don't want to write your own code. And the second one is essentially the offset of the file that is mapped to these memory addresses. And then you can see here is the all zeros, which means that from the beginning of the file until this offset will be mapped to these memory addresses. So if you dump all the memory of this process, you will see the almost same, exact same the portion of the file from the offset zero. And these are other information. We're going to look at all those things when we are working on the file systems. It's a device major number, minor number, inode numbers, and so on. So these are kind of the information that how you can locate the file descriptors and file handles on running system, but not really interesting for now. And so this one essentially, you can, if you run this code, you will get this memory section. Essentially, okay, we open this bin cat and then read only, it doesn't really matter, and then get the file descriptor, and then we run the FD. So I was saying that the first one, the address, you can specify where it should be mapped. And operating system, when they load a program, the memory state is kind of clean, like nothing particularly occupying the memory. So they are, the first thing they will do is, okay, put the code first, add some predefined address, which is 4 5 zeros, and then this is going to be the size. You should actually get the size from this file, but we just hard code for the presentation. And you're going to give read and executable, and this is going to be the private. If you know, someone wants to change, then it's not going to change the file contents. It's going to change just only the memory. And here is the file descriptor, and this is the size. Oh, this is not, this was not size, this was the flag. Anyway. So, right. So in system security, this executable is really one hot the flag, because these days in most operating system, and in also most systems, we are not giving this execution flag on the stack. But like 20 years ago, the stack was executable, which means that if you have corrupted stack and somehow you can put the code into the stack, you can run the things, which was, I'm not sure whether you're familiar with the buffer overflow attacks, but most traditional attack kind of assume that you can inject the shellcode and then execute. And those are now all gone because we are not giving this execution flag to the stack. And that's also how this return-oriented programming comes back and then say, okay, we are not trying to inject an actual code to the stack. We are only put the data, which is return address, and then exploiting the fact that actual code should have the execution flag. Otherwise, normal program cannot even execute. Any question in this part? So let's see how this memory mapping works. So this is essentially, let me first explain how this visualization works. So let's say you have a program and then you have a local variables and any memory buffers. And these are essentially representing all these buffers. This block essentially means one variables. And this is what a program actually sees. And these are the virtual pages and map to the file or memory and so on. And then this is the page table tricks. So operating system and the processor have some idea how to map those things to the actual memory or files and so on. So one trick operating system play is that even though a program asks, like, okay, I want to have 2 gigabytes of the memory buffer, and then before it uses some of the part, operating system will just say, okay, I can give you, and then like returns, but it actually does not occupy, preserve all the things to the memory before it accesses. So this is essentially what it means. It has no mappings. It operating system just stores that, okay, this process A asked 2 gigabytes and I gave. If they ask extra memory belong to those already preserved area, we need to handle those things. That's what operating system does. And then before it access the extra contents, it doesn't actually use or preserve any extra physical memory. And this layer is actually physical memory. Here is a file data cached in the memory. depending on the situation, even though this process didn't access the files yet, maybe other process access the file and then they are actively using it. So if two process wants to access the same file contents, then there is no need to have a duplicated memory blocks that have the same exact contents. So in some cases, we can actually reuse already loaded memory blocks. And the last layer is the file data shared, file data on the disk, SSD, which is very slow. And so essentially in here, we are playing the tricks to go to minimize interaction between these virtual pages and this disk and SSD. So let's say a program wants to read something, and then of course it requested earlier, so it should be there, but we didn't actually set up the page table. And then it's going to call the page bolt, and the page bolt say, okay, you are legitimate access. And then when I look at the memory, I find some other process or anything else already access the memory, so we have the contents ready for you. All we need to do is change the page table so that it can point to the existing data. And once we are done, the program read the contents here, and then everything is good. Any question this part?
So the cache of the file data was like, was cached because it was previously used by other programs?
Yeah, it could be previous within this program. Also, it could be previous with other programs. I mean, in for operating system, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. So yeah, this is kind of a little bit interesting situation, but yeah, just for the presentation. Yep. So yeah, it could be, you can think of, you know, when you fork and then you already have the parent process, have the access to the most of the data, but yeah. All right. And this is could be more typical case if you just create a program and then start to execute. Operating system knows this is a legitimate access, and this should be the contents that, you know, supposed to be here. But because there were no previous access by anyone else, it was not in the memory. And what it's going to do is allocate the new physical, kind of occupy a new physical block, and then read the things from here, and then connect this virtual memory to this physical memory, and then it's going to be all good. Any question this part? All right. And let's see. And remember that previously we have this huge map, but we only have the P because that program is pretty simple. Now we have a shared, so it's all same, just some data file, and then we open and we get the FD, and then we call the mmap with the same FD. We put a zero so that, okay, operating system, you find some new place, and then give me the address, I don't care where it is allocated. And here we put the shared, which means that if you change the buffer returned by this mmap, you will have, it's going to change the actual file contents in this temp sum data. So previously, if you're not using this mmap, if you want to change the contents of the file, you need to use the fwrite. But now you just need to operate on the buffer. You don't need to do the fwrite, but you are doing the same thing. So, and here, what's going to happen with that situation, so here we have map page, read, write, and now it's shared. Here, shared essentially means that this memory layer and this file disk layer, the content should be the shared and then also consistent. All right. So if program wants to access some buffer returned by the mmap, and if it's a shared, then okay, it will try to write something here, and what it's gonna do is, okay, it is changed, and this data on the disk is invalid now. You may remember when we look at these cache things, when the cache is updated by a particular process, they put the 30 bit, which means that the cache, the local copy of the cache, other caches are invalid. This is kind of the similar things that it marks that, okay, this block in the file is not up to date, and this is the up-to-date content, so anyone else actually wants to read, and either they need to get from here, or it needs to be pushed to the disk, and then somebody needs to get from the disk again. And when to write to the disk maybe depends on the implementation. And one way to think of is eventually when we free up the memory, this mapped memory, then it will write update to the disk. And all right. And this part from 60B and 60C. Is the private mapping, but it has a read and write, and also copy on write. This part is essentially the global variable section. So we discussed that when we fork, then if the child or parents, one of them wants to change some of the global variables, then it needs to allocate a new physical memory, and so on. So this is essentially how we can create these things. So you can imagine that all this code operating system has when, and then those will be executed when operating system wants to create a new process, which normally we call a loader of a program. So this is essentially the code in the program loader. It's the so same, give some particular address, so because it wants to be mapped here, and read and write, private, and so on. Any question in this slide or so far?
So like, mmap is essentially taking whatever is on the disk and like loading to the memory. So if we don't call mmap, we just like use the file descriptor directly. So is the program actually just fetching data straight from the disk and putting them into a register or something?
Yeah, if you do that one, then it's more like you read up some particular block or some amount of the data, and then you put things at once. So, but if you use mmap, you are not necessarily read all the files at once. You will just do it when it is needed. It is possible that you load like one gigabyte file, but you may access like the first byte, and then in the middle byte, and the later byte, then you actually access the 3 bytes. But if you use like app-open-app-read and those kind of things, then you probably waste a lot of the buffer that you are not actually using it. And another thing is, you can kind of implement like appseq and those kind of things, but if you do it, it is extremely slow. And actually, if you use this mmap, it's way faster than most of the implementation probably you can get. So yeah, it's actually pretty good for some data access, which is very sparse. And if you are accessing the data, when you access the data, if you're accessing some portion of the data at a time, it's better to use this mmap. And another thing for you, probably, it's way easier just access as if you're accessing the memory buffer rather than you're operating the file system. All right, so now we are looking at this memory copy on write. And reads are usually all the same because you don't change the things. And if, for example, like, okay, this is right. So, like, if you want to read, for example, here, which is not mapped yet, and then let's say, just assume that this block is what is supposed to be mapped, then read always, okay, it is reading some legitimate address, then it will just map the physical pages and so on. But when it writes on copy on write, what it's gonna do is it will duplicate the physical memory and then give it to private block to this process. So, right. And then if the process keep writing here, it's gonna be just private. It will just do any update here does not affect the shared part here or nor disk. Any question here? Yeah, I think it's just the same example we keep looking at, like fork a process, and then the process wants to change some of the global variables. Assuming that you have two processes, you may want to share a lot of common things that like a code and all those constant data, but obviously you don't want to share the global variables, the contents of the global variables. And the fourth line is essentially a heap data structure. So notice that here we don't have any file. So because heap is the memory space that you allocate while you're running the program, and then it's not gonna be saved in anywhere, so it doesn't have any file backed up, and also that's why here has no information about the file system, like inode, device numbers, and so on. Right. And this is the case where there is no backing file. So notice here that there is nothing. But we have some situation that we need to actually push those things out, because we most operating system always say to the process that they have way more memory space than they actually have. Like for example, like 20 years old, my computer has like 16 megabytes, but it always say like you can access 4 gigabytes of the memory. Then we gonna handle those things by swapping out all those things, which we will look at now. So here is the program buffers, and here is the data in memory, and then this is the page tables, some of them not set it, and some of them are correctly connected. And when it access a new page, and then it's gonna allocate a new physical pages, and then update the page table so that it can link this virtual address to this physical memory. And let's say we only have like 5 blocks of the memory, and then somebody else, other process, wants to access new memory. One way to do is like, okay, we don't have the memory, just kill the process, but that's not a good way. So one thing we can do is, even though these old memories does not have any linked data, linked file on the file system, we can create a particular file for storing all these memories to free up physical memory for other processes. This is because this actually enables, as long as a process does not use the physical memory at the same time, we can run any programs as many as possible. So let's say there is another program try to access a new memory, and then we try to accommodate their request. Then what we can do is, okay, you have these 5 blocks, let's kick 1 block out, but it could be needed later, so we can just delete, and we cannot just delete. So what we can do is remove this guy and copy all the contents to a file, particular file, which is called swap file, and disconnect the page table so that later this program wants to read and write something, at this virtual memory, then we can see, okay, this is not linked, it will cause the page fault. Then what we will look up is that, okay, this was swapped out. Then what we're going to do is allocate the things and then copy these things to back from the swap file and then link it again so that the program operates correctly. Any question here? So I think here, representation is a little bit not very accurate in some sense because the data is not staying in the virtual pages, essentially. The virtual page is gone, no physical data, all the data is at here. And then when somebody, when this program wants to access this virtual address again, then it's going to cause page fault. The page fault handler will check what happens, the history of this this page. And then it will tell, okay, it was swapped out. Then say, okay, not allocating, it will allocate a new physical memory buffer here and then copy the data from the swap because it was operated by the program and then give it to back. Any question? This slide. How many of you actually heard of these swap files and those kind of things? Because, okay, that's good. Because after we have 4 gigabytes of the memory, now essentially this swap file is not really useful. Sometimes actually people just suggest that, okay, turn off the swap because it just slows down as long as you have more than 4 gigabytes. And as long as you're running 32 gigabyte machine, actually there's no way the operating system can access more than 4 gigabytes of the memory space. So then it's sort of you can actually map the whole memory address space to the physical memory space, kind of. And, all right, what was the point here? Okay. And, right, and other cases that we want to save the space, what we're going to do is, here we are talking about the saving space by saving space on the physical memory. So that other program can occupy these blocks. Right. And let's say in this situation, and other programs say, okay, I need more memory, and the operating system first will cut these connections on the data, the non-modified data. So these data are not modified, it's duplicated carbon copy of this disk. The reason they are doing this, they are kind of, you can see that here, they cut here, cut here, cut here, not this guy, is because you don't need to back up all the contents because all the contents were just duplicate from the disk, so you don't need to do any extra for reducing the space. And the problem here is that if you want to swap out this block, what you're going to do is you need to read these contents and create another things here and then copy those things and then unlink this page table. But obviously, there's a lot of more operation. Operating system will look for the easiest way, the quickest way, which is already they have the duplicate carbon copy of the contents on the data, and then you just need to cut. And if it needs more contents, then of course it will cut here, but it needs to copy all those things and then put all those things to the swap file. And also need to write some of the metadata saying that, okay, this was the contents of this memory and it was swapped out, and how you can retrieve and, restore all this memory state. Any question here? All right. So Historically, the major use of virtual memory is supporting these swap files, and also it can provide a multi-layer of memory hierarchy using larger disk and so on. So I think 20 years ago, when I was having this 16 megabytes of the little computer, sometimes I have like game that requires 32 megabyte of the RAM, and then the program will just create. First the program will do is like checking the size of the memory, and then if it's insufficient, then it just quit. And that time there was a private application. Actually, what they are saying is they will increase your memory by installing the software. And they sold those kind of thing like $20. It was still expensive to me, but it was way cheaper than actual 16 megabytes of the memory. At that time, it was like 200 or something. And somehow I get, you know, some copies from my friends, and then, you know, I install that one, and then boom, the computer say, now you have like 64 megabyte. And at that time, I feel like that was like black magic, but that's essentially how they implement this page table trick in the DOS. And now we have really, most operating system, Windows, Linux, all support those page tables. And now we really don't worry about the insufficient memories. And this swap file, supporting the swap file, is essentially implemented by operating system by using the mmap with, here it says default files. I feel this is a little bit difficult to understand. This is essentially a mmap with a predefined file. So they know what kind of swap file they will use. So they will have one designated file that will back up and restore all the contents from the memory. And the reason we are doing those things is that because hard and SSDs are, even though SSD is way faster than hard disk drive, it is still slower than the memory, and also, it's very much slower than normal operation on the CPU. So while we are waiting millisecond or hundred of microsecond, we may be able to execute, CPU may be able to execute like multiple millions of instructions. And so in operating system, the memory is essentially a cache for disk. So all the data is stored on the disk, but we need to somehow get those contents to the memory so that processor can operate. So when you actually look at all these instruction, x86 instructions, they don't really have any primitives to access the disk directly. All they operate the data is they just assume that everything was on the memory, and the operating systems, one of the big job is that providing those contents from the disk to the memory without causing a lot of delays. Operating system has a big goal that manage those kind of cache mechanism intelligently. So, And this mechanism is fully associative, which means that essentially what it means that the mapping between the virtual memory address and the physical memory address, or this virtual address to the files, part of the files, can be completely configurable. So you can just map any place to any place of the virtual memory to any place of the files, or any place of a physical memory. And all these allocation, deallocation, replacement are done by operating system programs, or this application developers doesn't need to worry about anything of those things. And normal cache hit, which means that a CPU tries to access the memory and it doesn't cause any page fault, which will be the optimal state of this mapping, is not interfered by operating system. So if everything is good, if all the mapping is correct, and then CPU just want to read the things and then it was just there, it's all done within the process. And only operating system interferes when there are something not set up or when they are writing something on the like read-only memory blocks. Okay, so I think we are done here. And any questions so far? All right.